Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. Ready. Got my pencil. I'm a pencil guy.
Very random.
Well, I like pencils.
Because you want to erase your mistakes?
Because it's the ultimate ability to erase your mistakes.
I like to just cross out my mistakes and write over them.
Do you cross them out in giant red letters?
No. I do this little squiggly line thing. Yeah. So then no one can read what I wrote that was wrong.
So my mom always used to grade my papers before I turned them into my teacher.
That explains a lot.
Yep. And one of the things that she used to do, she used to take the like red pencil. I think I'd nail a paper. Like, this is amazing. What a great paper.
Yeah.
And I'd hand it to her, and it would be a bloodbath when I got it back. I mean, bleeding red through the paper. So then by the time I got into like junior in high school, I'd be so mad that she would destroy my paper. I'd be like, God, Mom, why do you do that? Then I'd go back and I'd type it up. By the time I was in my junior year in high school, I'd be writing and I'd be like, oh, my mom's going to hate that sentence.
Oh.
And I'd do it in. And then all of a sudden, in some weird way, I got to college and then I started to be like, I hate that sentence. So my mom actually got me to write better.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Take that, people who don't believe in the red pen.
Or their mother. I'm not sure where you were going with that.
I don't know. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Podcasts for Good. This is actually a special episode. We are on the, we're leading up to the Golf for Veterans Tournament, which is on Saturday, September 15th. And it is a tournament that the proceeds go to Homes for Troops. One of the neat things we do at the golf tournament is we have different charities basically sponsoring, quote unquote, various holes. They go out there and they meet and mingle with the different golfers. It's pretty cool way for charities to basically get a chance to spread their message to folks who are out having a good time.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring that up and why this special podcast sort of ties into that is because the Washington State Concern of Police Survivors has been a constant at the Golf for Veterans Tournament.
Yes.
Literally every single year that we've done the tournament, they have been one of the folks who have been manning a tee box out there spreading the good word.
And we did try to record a podcast with them.
We
at
did
the golf tournament
we did.
Last
and
year
to really mixed results, and by mixed I mean god awful,
like loud golfers.
It was pretty bad. The wind was like whipping through it.
We were next to the freeway.
It was bad. So, lesson learned, we do not do live podcasts.
Nope.
We're not a radio show.
We must be controlled in a room.
Yes. It needs
four
to be
walls, ceiling,
I
floor.
I require my temperature at 74 degrees.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Actually, that's too hot for me.
Yeah.
I'm probably like a 68. I'm a 68 degree person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about 68 degrees. Cool, 68. Don't need meat hanging in the place.
No.
But I'm, 68's nice. I'm Philip Kerrigan. I'm the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive. And with me, as always, is my stalwart co-chair.
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
That is correct. She's a fabulous co-host.
Thanks.
And today she's carrying the load because you were the interviewer.
I was.
So we sat down with Brenda Donner, who is actually the chair, the communications chair for the Washington State Concern of Police Survivors. She is really the face for those who have ever interacted with this particular charity. She's kind of the face of the charity. She does really, really hard work. She goes anywhere and everywhere to sort of spread the message about what it is that they do. So really, they work mostly in the field of helping families who have law enforcement officers who were killed in the line of duty.
Yes.
Much like, a behind the badge sort of thing.
Yeah.
They set up scholarship funds and they do different various things like that. So it's a pretty cool thing for, to honor sort of some of the, biggest public servants that we have in our society, really.
Yeah.
And so the interview, you'll only notice Heather's voice because anytime we have a podcast where I want to be a part of it, Heather gets to do it alone. because I know her personally. Heather is actually the person who interviews Brenda.
I did.
In this particular instance, but you'll hear a pretty cool, blow by blow of what the charity's all about.
Yeah.
But before we get into that interview, yes. Why don't you hit me with our standard question of the pod?
Yes. So when I was talking with Brenda, it did occur to me maybe just like any other human, law enforcement officials, they need hobbies. So everybody needs a hobby. If you could suggest a hobby for Washington State law enforcement, what hobby would you suggest?
Oh, wow. Okay.
I like that you're eating a donut, by the way, for the law enforcement podcast.
That's not what this is.
Are you kidding me right now?
That is not what happened.
Is that neither here nor there? Is that?
That is. You're paying attention to all the wrong details. That is something I do on Friday. I eat a donut.
That is a fact. Uh-huh. True, but
yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. So I guess
baking, maybe donut eating.
Do you know what I would say? I would say, kind of in the realm of because every single law enforcement officer has to learn how to shoot a gun.
Uh huh.
So they have to be pretty good at aiming for a target.
Yeah.
I'm going to say lawn darts.
Okay.
Because it's target-based.
Sure.
Right? Or the always famous cornhole.
Nice.
Target-based. That should be a hobby that
I like that
take
they're
up.
Both, outside lawn games.
Yeah. I always think of, at least the four friends I have that are in law enforcement. I'm always hanging out with them at, a barbecue.
Yeah.
Right? Or a football game or something like that. It's always, family around.
Do.
Yeah. And so then you throw those things back there, and they win every time because they are sharpshooters, and they know what they're doing.
Nice.
So that would be mine. What about you?
Well, I was thinking something that would be calming, knitting.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. It also made me think of, was it Demolition Man? When Sylvester Stallone gets cryogenically frozen, he comes out and he has this urge to knit.
To knit. Yeah. Yeah. So. That was by the way, that's a real rewatchable movie.
Yeah. Throwback.
I love Demolition Man.
Wesley Snipes, right?
That could be a movie we talk a little bit about in one of our podcasts.
Yeah, just me and you, because no one else will.
Nobody has ever even seen Demolition Man. Yeah. I mean, people probably didn't even know that Benjamin Bratt, Sandra Bullock, they're all in that movie. Yeah,
fact.
San Andreas?
San Andreas, I think
so. Yeah. Or San Angeles or something like that. And Taco Bell is the only thing that's available.
Yeah.
Because they won the Food Wars or whatever.
Yeah, the Food Wars.
Okay, cranky. So we digressed big time. into that. But for those of you who haven't seen it, go watch Demolition Man.
Yeah,
quite a good movie.
Yeah.
So without further ado, and without distracting you any longer, mm-hmm. we're going to take you into Heather's interview with Brenda Donner, the communications chair for the Washington State Concern of Police Survivors. Here it is.
So I'm here with Brenda Donner, who is the immediate past president for the National Concerns for Police Survivors Organization, but the current communications chair for the Washington State Concerns for Police Survivors. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Heather. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
So far, so good.
Yay. So can you give us a little history about Washington State Concerns for Police of Police Survivors and what you do for the community?
Yes, Washington State Concerns of Police Survivors is one of over 55 chapters across the country of the national organization called Concerns of Police Survivors.
Mm-hmm.
Our chapter was founded in 1996.
Okay.
And we serve the survivors living in Washington State, whether or not their officer died in our state or elsewhere.
Okay.
Our charter, our articles of incorporation include the entire state of Washington, and the support is provided therefore for survivors living from Vancouver to Spokane, Walla Walla to Bellingham.
Sure.
So our services are tied into our national organization.
Okay.
So we have counseling, we've got group retreats, National Police Week, one-off coffees, anything that's going to help us help our survivors adapt to their new normal and can carry on.
Okay. And I know, like, this is something that's probably, like, a topic that not everybody is comfortable with. I mean, anytime you talk about death, especially in, like, our civilization, our society, nobody really wants to address it or talk about it. And then recently there was another service for a fallen police officer. When a police officer dies in the line of duty, what kind of impact does that have on a spouse or their family?
Their world is turned upside down. Their social structure has been obliterated because mm-hmm. cops tend to hang with cops. Therefore, okay. cops' families tend to hang with cop families.
Okay.
And that structure has been ripped away. A lot of times, their financials might be just on the officer because sometimes the caretaker is the female of the relationship, and there she's got the children.
Okay.
So their financial structure has been ripped away as well. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, it's devastating. You've lost your partner, mm-hmm. You've lost your brother or sister, you've lost your dad, mm-hmm. you've lost your mom, or parents have lost their children.
Sure.
Cousins have lost their best friend. So it's not just the immediate family of spouse and kids. It's mm-hmm. a triple down effect. More people are devastated than also the community. We just saw that.
Yeah.
The vocal minority tends to scream about how bad the cops are, but there's a lot more out there that really appreciate the job that police officers do. They don't typically say that. You
sure.
don't go up to a cop and say, hey, thanks for the job you're doing.
Yeah.
So sadly, when there's a loss, that's when the community comes out and supports the officers. So it affects everybody. You don't really think of it until a loss happens.
Yeah.
And you just realize how much people appreciate our law enforcement,
yeah.
and then how they want to embrace the family members and co-workers. That's mm-hmm. a huge segment.
Co-workers?
It's not just, yeah. It's not just the family members, mm-hmm. with quotes, co-workers as well.
Yeah.
They still have to go out there and do their job.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really difficult to, when they go out to take their next shift and they're still grieving over yeah. the loss of their fellow officer.
Yeah.
And so we reach out to departments and help them construct a method for them to embrace and help their officers, but also help the officers realize they get back to work. We need you back out there.
Yeah.
So it's a delicate balancing act to have the co-workers grieve, but yet still continue to function in their job. Similarly with family members.
Yeah.
You know what? I still got to wake up. I got to feed my kids.
Yeah.
I have to pay the mortgage. How am I going to do that? So that's sort of what we provide is a blueprint. We can't fix what happened.
Sure.
But we try to say, all right, we've been through this, and we're going to try to help you navigate.
So when you talk about like a blueprint for how a family or a spouse could get through a loss like that, what kind of things do you do? You said coffee, like one-on-one coffees, those kinds of things. Is that where your focus is?
Well, it's all peer support.
Okay.
Concerns of Police Survivors is at its base peer support. Every chapter, all 55, uh-huh. are staffed by volunteers. We don't get paid to do this, but
okay.
because we've been through it, we understand what the new folks are experiencing.
Sure.
We want to try to help them with, again, like you said, the one-on-one coffees. Hey, we'll get a spouse that's talking to a new spouse. We'll get some adult children, mm-hmm. such as myself, to talk to new adult children, because only we can answer in the same way. I don't know how a spouse feels to lose their officer in line.
Sure.
But by golly, I can talk to another adult child, and have.
Yeah.
And I've had adult children say, how did you handle your firsts? How did you, when you walked down the aisle, when you graduated, when you had your first kid?
Yeah.
And I'm allowed to say that maybe a parent or a sibling or somebody else can't. I can tell that adult child, you know what? I was really angry at my dad. He should have been there.
Yeah.
And that adult child is going to get it.
Yeah.
Whereas someone else might be aghast. You can't be mad at your dead dad.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
I can. Exactly. And then help with little bits of assistance. For example, getting married.
Mm-hmm.
Tuck your dad's picture in there. Wear his badge. I've got his badge on my necklace today. Wear his badge tucked someplace so your dad or mom
uh-huh.
is with you.
Sure.
And being able to share that peer-to-peer sometimes is more effective than a lecture
uh-huh.
or someone who, a different type of loss, trying to say, you should feel this way or you shouldn't feel this way.
Yeah.
We also are able to educate. again, speaking from an adult child's perspective, what was difficult for us as children when our dad died was the fact that people thought they were trying to protect us.
Okay.
And by doing so, they didn't answer our questions.
Okay.
So what happens is when someone says, and they mean it most sincerely,
sure,
your dad or your mom is in a better place. This is how the little kid's brain translates. Better place is not here. Why didn't daddy or mommy want to be here? Me. I'm the reason that daddy or mommy died.
Because you're not in the better place.
Exactly. So by people wanting to protect us, mm-hmm. our little brains go beep, 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 right down yeah. the worst possible scenario.
Yeah.
And so we grew up with crushing guilt. We did something to kill our parent. And okay. again, this is just speaking from an adult
child. Sure.
Siblings are going to have a different type of relationship mm-hmm. with their family member who died, parents, spouses, fiancés. Mm-hmm. They all have different relationships. But peer-to-peer is the core of what we do at each chapter of COPS. Then we plug people into the services that National provides.
Okay.
We've got National Police Week every May 12th through May 17th.
Okay.
Every year. Doesn't matter the days of the week. It's the 12th through the 17th.
Okay.
And the way Police Week is structured is we encourage people to go to everything. Some people think it's just the public ceremonies on the 13th and the 15th.
Okay.
But in between those, COPS has sessions, Concerned to Police Survivors.
Mm-hmm.
We've got sessions. And we encourage people to go to that because that's when you're going to find many others just like you. You break off into little clusters. Parents of felonious officers killed in felonious action. They've mm-hmm. got their sessions. Children of officers have their session. Fiancés, lesbian, gay, bi, trans, they've got their sessions.
Okay.
So you get really personal sessions at Police Week in between the very public ceremonies on the 13th and the 15th.
That's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah, they do a really good job of working with the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund,
uh-huh.
which is the folks that do the candlelight vigil, on the 13th.
Okay.
Then the 14th is COP sessions. The 15th is the very public ceremony on the West Lawn of the Capitol,
yeah.
where the president, this year is the president and vice president, both came to speak. Very public. Then the 16th is COP sessions again. So you get this roller coaster of high emotion, very visible,
uh-huh.
and then cocooned with COPS.
Sure.
And another high emotion, visible, publicly visible ceremony, and then the COPS sessions as well. So it kind of goes like a roller coaster.
And for the most part, the public is welcome to go to all of these events?
They're welcome to go to the 13th and the 15th mm-hmm. because the candlelight vigil is held on the National Mall.
Okay.
And that's very, very public. Then the ceremony at the Capitol. It's difficult to get in because you have to go through detectors and
sure.
you need to be checked off of a list, but people stand in the streets and they watch and they can hear
mm-hmm.
what's going on. The 14th and the 16th Concerned to Police Survivor sessions are designed for the survivors.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the public
sure.
glare. You're not going to find a media person with a camera in their face.
Yeah,
how do you feel about your dad, officer? It's we can't fix it, but let's hug you and let's give you some tools.
Yeah.
We've got we call them mentals. It's not a derogatory term. It's a term of endearment. They're at Police Week the entire time. If they see people struggling, particularly more than normal,
okay.
they will take them one-on-one
oh, okay.
and talk to them. During
so more like a mental health counseling session
exactly.
right then and there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. So we try to plug into the what can we do to help. And then COPS also has retreats.
Okay.
And I'm an adult child. I can speak to that one. I go to the adult children's retreat. My mom cannot go to mine.
Sure.
I cannot go to the spouse's retreat.
Okay.
I can't go to siblings. There's a ton of them. We've got a couple of different retreats for children. We've got COPS kids from ages 6 to 14. They go to a big camp in Wisconsin
okay.
with a parent or guardian, and they just take over the camp for the entire week. They
nice.
Do activities. Yes, there's counseling as well, but not in terms of, you're going to go to this room and sit down and be counseled. It's say it like police.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go chat. See, and have a little, let's go talk. They share with each other,
uh-huh.
and that way you start bonding.
Okay.
You might not find somebody else from Washington State in just your particular circumstance, but you might find somebody from Maine.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of these camps.
And then you connect with them and you can relate to them and your experience.
Exactly. You plug into somebody else who might be similar to you.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
So then we've got Outward Bound, which is ages 15 through 20.
Okay.
And adjacent to that is young adults.
Okay.
What we found at the National COPS level is retreats, the siblings retreat started at age 21. adult children's retreat starts at age 21.
Okay.
But a lot of officers are younger. Mm-hmm. They have young siblings.
Sure. Where do they go?
Exactly. So National COPS 4 years ago instituted the Young Adults Camp.
Okay.
It picks up the young siblings of officers who've died in the line of duty, and it also picks up maybe physically challenged children of fallen officers who can't do the very physically demanding outward bound.
Sure.
So young adults is just exploding in popularity because we found a niche for these.
Well, if something didn't exist before and now it does, you're going to find a lot of people are interested.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And so then we have the adult children's, which is people like me, age 21 up until you're dead.
Adults, right?
Yeah. We've got some 70-year-olds there.
Yeah.
That's great. And to see them mingle. Typically, when you meet somebody new, you struggle. Why? What would we have in common? Why would we bond?
Sure.
Boom. We already got that. We have a dead parent. Yahoo. So it doesn't matter if you're 21 and just rose up through the COPS kids camps to outward bound or young adults up to adult children, or if you dropped in when you're 30 years old, or if you've been involved before the COPS program started and you came when adult children started, everybody starts at the same common denominator. We lost our law enforcement parent.
Okay.
And so you see the 21-year-olds bonding perfectly with the 70-year-olds. It doesn't matter the age.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then we've got kids camp, I said, parents retreat, siblings retreat, extended family, which is just a few years old.
Okay.
We realized that there were uncles, aunts, cousins, nieces, nephews who were particularly close to the officer, but yet they didn't feel that they didn't had a right to grieve because they didn't have a retreat. They couldn't say, I'm a survivor.
Yeah.
And we found, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
So our eyes were open. Let's start the extended family retreat.
That's really neat.
Yeah. And the biggest two are co-workers and co-workers for couples.
Okay.
Just exploding. Because co-workers tend to be very macho. No, you're grieving as well, like we said earlier.
There's a process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they still have to be functional at work.
Yeah.
So let's give them the tools so that they can function at work, grieve the loss of the officer, not go home and kick the dog or yell at the spouse.
Yeah.
That's no good.
Yeah.
So get co-workers for couples and co-workers retreat. Have them be able to gather tools. When I feel a trigger coming on that's going to remind me of my fallen partner.
Yeah.
How can I mitigate what's going to happen? Typically, I'll blow my stack.
Okay. Sure.
So what kind of tools can I learn? How can I, you know, mitigate it, just reduce the stress, and still function as a family member, and still function as in my job, my career?
So as far as, like, a coworker goes and police departments go, do you think that there are really good police department divisions that support officers when they have, like, a loss of a partner or just a coworker or someone in their department?
Yes. There are departments that do it absolutely correctly.
Uh-huh.
They understand the need to grieve, but they also balance that with the need that the public says, hey, I'm paying him to be him or her to be out on the street.
Sure.
Get him back out there. There's been studies, and it's proven that the way the department responds to a loss directly impacts the recovery of the survivor.
Okay.
So if you've got a department that goes, well, you've got your one day grieving done, get back to work. Whereas if you have a department that says, listen, I know you're still grieving the loss of Officer XYZ, so let's let the chaplain ride with you today.
Okay.
And see if they can, you know, talk with you or you can talk with them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get you set up with a coffee from a buddy from another department, just some sort of outlets. Let's go shooting together.
Yeah.
Let's go bowling, something.
Yeah.
Sort of one-on-one.
Okay.
So those departments are more successful at keeping officers engaged and keeping officers on the force.
Yeah.
Many times when there's a loss, some of the officers just can't handle it.
They don't want to come back?
No. My dad's department, for example, my dad is the only one who died on the line of duty in Rossford, Ohio. Even though I was 8 years old, I can still remember Officer, I won't say his last name, he would drive past our house to go to work. He changed his pattern. He couldn't drive by our house anymore because every time he saw us, he thought that could have been my family and my kids.
Wow.
And he didn't want to be a police officer anymore after a time. He said, the stress is eating me up.
Wow.
So fast forward to now, how many good officers do we lose because they don't understand what tools are out there to help them navigate through the loss and grief of their officer? And how many do we lose that say, I can't do this anymore, I'm done, I'm out of here?
Sure. Yeah, and like, you know, you go into an area like law enforcement knowing there's definitely a risk there that you might not make it home every day, but as far as like coping mechanisms that officers have, I mean, you mentioned earlier, macho. Like, do you still feel like that is something that you have to battle through to be like, don't be so macho, don't bottle it up, let everything out. You got to talk and work through it.
Yeah, and that's just the culture of law enforcement, military, firefighters, all the service, the first responder.
Yeah.
I think it's in their DNA.
Yeah.
And so we want them to understand, we appreciate their I'm tough.
Sure. That tough exterior, yeah.
Exactly. But we also appreciate that they may need to be ministered to and let that grief out in an appropriate manner. We don't want to see divorces. We don't want to see officers that are law enforcement or first responders commit suicide.
Yeah.
You can't recover from that.
No, that's true. Yeah.
But there's studies out there. National Police Suicide Foundation, I hope I got that right, Bob Douglas. The studies are between 3 and 4 times as many law enforcement personnel kill themselves as are killed feloniously in
seriously
the line of duty. Yes. Yeah. So if you say you got 20, I'll just take, because math is easy for me, let's say you got 25 killed feloniously every year.
Okay.
3 to 4 times means we could have 75 to 100 first responders kill themselves as die feloniously.
And it would be because of what had happened originally, like more than likely.
Could be cumulative stress. Yeah. Stress from the job, stress from citizens very helpfully keeping their video cameras out but not picking up the entire incident.
Sure.
And then posting it without getting, again, the entire view.
Mm-hmm.
They have to live with that stress. First responders can't say, well, wait, that's not all that happened. You didn't catch the beginning.
Yeah.
They have to go through process.
Mm-hmm.
The departments have to review and then release. Well, there's a delay between what originally was posted, the snippet that this aggrieved citizen wants posted, versus the entire video. And so they have to live with that. That's
sure
pretty stressful.
Yeah.
They have to live with people who yell at them, maybe become physical with them,
mm-hmm,
and then if an officer or first responder retaliates, like, hey, you just, you know, you kicked me in the shins, I'm going to kick you back.
Yeah, like right? a response that...
Exactly.
Yeah, fight or flight kind of response.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then they're the ones that get called on the carpet and reviewed and,
mm-hmm,
and et cetera. So that sort of stress as well.
Yeah.
And again, we as concerned police survivors can't mitigate that because
sure
that's personnel decisions.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do is say, all right, here's some tools to help you figure out a way to deal with all these bombardments for you. We can't fix it, same thing as we can't fix it with a fallen officer,
mm-hmm,
but let's help you with tools. Concerns of Police Survivors offers 3-day training every year in all 9 regions of the country. We have 9 regional trustees at the national level, and so each region hosts what we call traumas of law enforcement every year.
Okay.
And that's for law enforcement personnel. We get officers who have been injured. They come in and talk about how the department treats them after an injury, how fellow officers treat them after an injury, how they recover and either return to police work or don't return to police work.
Yeah.
How that affects them mentally. You put on your firefighter's uniform or your police uniform, that's what you are.
Yeah.
Well, if that's taken away,
what do you do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So injured officers have a good segment of the traumas of law enforcement. This is how it impacts family, me, my department. We also have Bob Douglas or somebody from the National Police Suicide Foundation come in and talk about suicide.
Yeah.
A suicide survivor. How this affected me is with my kid or my brother or my dad, whoever. So they come and talk about suicide and, again, the tools that you can have for there. We talk about concerns of police survivors, the services that we have. We're so blessed. We have Law Enforcement United, which is just a monster bicycle ride every year. They raise money to help us fund our programs at the national level, so they're free to attend.
Very nice.
Which is just huge, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Our departments, our chapters at the local level, chapter level, our job is to raise funds so we can get people to these retreats.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So National provides them free of charge. We at the chapter level say, here, we're raising money so you can go. All you're out is the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah.
Your time.
Exactly. Time. And if you're missing, if you're a job, figure it out. We have the retreat scheduled the same weekends every year. Mm-hmm. So people can plan. I know that my adult children's retreat is always Father's Day weekend.
Oh, okay.
If you're, you know, union, you can bid and say, I need these days off.
Yeah.
So you can figure out a way to schedule to go to these retreats.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So in, I don't know, maybe the past few months, it kind of seems like suicide is talked about a little more. It's a little more publicly. There have been some public figures who've committed suicide. But as far as it comes for law enforcement personnel, I gotta say, like, I don't think that it's talked about too much. I mean, I feel like military personnel is talked about a little bit more, but regardless, like, what do you think about any kind of, is that getting better? Like, is there service and help out there that is getting better and reaching everybody better?
It's funny you should mention that. We, Concerns of Police Survivors at the national level has been approached, and we know that the Bob Douglas's National Suicide Prevention Foundation, they're reaching out because we do recognize there's a lot of officers that commit suicide.
Yeah.
And the one that I remember most specifically is New York in 2008, Lieutenant Piggott, 21-year veteran of the NYPD. A man was called, dispatch was called to take care of a man who was these brownstone buildings in New York with the outside fire escapes.
Yeah.
He was climbing on the fire escape. The man had no clothes on.
Okay.
He had a light, like a shop light, 6 foot long shop light, and he was brandishing it like a sword. So here comes NYPD, because help, help, concerned citizens call.
Sure,
let's get this guy up. So Lieutenant Piggott says, all right, this guy, come on down. Of course, the guy's not going to climb down.
Yeah.
And so he instructed his subordinate, listen, we got to get him down, because if he smashes this 6 foot tall, the 6 foot long shop light, all of a sudden it becomes a weapon.
Yeah.
And we don't know what's going to rain down on people below, because everyone was very helpfully standing below there. So he said, let's tase him. Let's get the guy down.
Okay.
Well, it didn't work out quite as planned.
Mm-hmm.
The Morales is the guy with had no clothes on brandishing this shop light. He fell on his head and he died.
Oh, wow.
So Lieutenant Piggott, 21-year NYPD veteran, totally clean record, went to his precinct because NYPD had taken away his gun and his badge the second this incident was over, which is standard procedure.
Sure.
Yeah. He found a gun and committed suicide.
So he didn't wait for anything to happen as far as, like, an official ruling for anything. It was just more like maybe the identity of the gun and the badge being taken away. Like, he's lost himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We'll never know what went through his mind, but typically your gun and your badge, you don't just grab any
gun. You identify.
Gun. Yeah. You don't grab a gun out of the toy chest and say, I'll take this one today.
It's yours. Yeah.
Exactly. So that part of law, it went away. So his widow, and I can talk about it because it's all adjudicated and it's done.
Sure.
His widow sued NYPD and said, we want benefits because he served 21 years, never a bad record.
Mm-hmm.
Because at suicide, there were no benefits.
Wow.
Zippo.
So even just for service, I mean, after a police officer retires, spouses, and they get their benefits. So they just...
Retirement's totally different than taking your own life.
Wow.
Yep. At the national level, Concerned to Police Survivors also advocates for PSOB, Public Safety Officers Benefits.
Okay.
At the national level, there is a safety net in case an officer dies in the line of duty. It's tied every year to COLA, so it increases every year. State of Washington, in 2010, I don't remember the year, sorry.
No worries.
The state of Washington has benefits as well that are tied to COLA. They started at $150,000, and since they're tied to COLA now, it's about $200,000+.
Okay.
So between, you can get federal, you can get state, you can get one and not the other.
Okay.
You can get both, you can get none. But assuming that it's declared line of duty death in both state and federal, there's $500,000 there.
Wow.
Now everybody goes, wow, that's a lot of money. Now think about this. Even assuming an officer makes $50,000 a year, that's 10 years worth.
Yeah, it's only 10 years.
It's 10 years, right. You got a young family.
That's not going to last.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a safety net. So we talk about PSOB at these traumas law enforcement training.
Yeah.
We host at the national level PSOB training. So when there's an officer who perishes in the line of duty, PSOB trainers from every chapter are, hey, let's, we can walk you through this department. We know how to do it.
Yeah.
So
how do social support groups and just support groups like Concerns for Police Survivors, how does COPS help a survivor manage and then grow through that loss and move on to be back in the community and back as like having their life back again?
Yeah. Again, we can't fix it.
Yeah.
But what we do is the peer-to-peer, one-to-one support, and then the group support. We have a lot of closed social media groups.
Okay.
And we help each other out. I'm only on my adult children's closed mm-hmm. social media group. I can't go on to another one.
Yeah.
And so all the adult children on there, we know we're free mm-hmm. to express what is bothering us at any given moment or share ideas of something that worked.
Yeah.
Similarly, I'm assuming that all the other...
They do the same?
Yeah. I'm assuming. I can't get on them. I
sure,
don't know.
Sure.
But again, that peer-to-peer, because we meet once a year at our retreats. Uh-huh. We meet once a year at Police Week. But that doesn't mean our challenge is, hey...
Yeah, you only have challenges twice in the year, yeah.
Exactly. And just normal stuff.
Yeah.
Like, my lawnmower broke and my kid's sick and I'm just at the end of my rope and somebody will beep, 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 call.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's again, that one-on-one peer support.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you find that social media is really, really impactful for COPS? And
negatively and positively.
Okay.
Negatively, when you get... these postings, the viral videos they're called, and
sure.
It's like, wait, what's the whole story? It's negative when an officer dies in the line of duty and everybody's out there in the rush to get the name posted.
Mm-hmm.
No. It gets posted after the department has notified all the family members.
Sure.
You never want to hear about an officer with the chopper flying above and
yeah.
then you see the number on the roof of the car and you go, oh, well, that's Joe. Oh, my gosh, Joe's car got crushed. Beep, beep, beep. Hey, did you hear about Joe? What?
Yeah.
No, that is not how it's supposed to be done.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to rush and speculate and give a wrong name
yeah.
or just give a name. It's not social media's point. That's not their job.
Yeah.
It's the job of the department to get it. And there's a right way and a wrong way. We always encourage officers, in fact, that's part of our training. Our local chapter goes out as well and
mm-hmm.
conducts two-hour trainings. And we talk about logical things like, are you married?
Yeah.
Is your wife listed as your contact number?
Yeah.
Do you have a girlfriend? Is she listed as a contact number? If you have both, we don't want to know about it. But, but do you have parents? Do you have siblings? And if you have parents... is there something we need to know about them?
Yeah.
If we go knocking on the door and Dad's got a heart condition and we say, well, I'm sorry to tell you, Mr. Jones, you're and he
yeah,
keels
yeah.
up, that's no good.
No.
Or if your parent has dementia or Alzheimer's and you knock on the door, I'm sorry, Mrs. Jones, your son died, who? You need
yeah.
to know that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So keep your contact list current of who you want called. And then we also go into talking about wills.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a will. I'm not dead yet.
It's
yeah.
necessary, right?
It's necessary because yeah. you want to protect your family.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. So just get your will done and then update them every year. Did you have another kid?
Yeah.
Let's get them in the will. And then, is there somebody you think is going to cause problems?
Yeah.
Put them in the will. To my cousin Schnibble, I'm going to give $1 because you know that cousin's going to give you grief.
Yeah.
So put them in that way. So just, you know, take care of your family. Take care of your
That's
responsibilities.
That's an interesting concept. I never thought about that. If you got someone who is a troublemaker in your family, put them in the will. Give them something minimal or a little itty-bitty tiny thing, and then they're taken care of.
Yeah.
That's
and
funny.
And they can't contest it.
That is
you're
funny.
Mentioned.
You're in the will.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
I also like that you keep knocking on wood. It's good that this is a wood table because we definitely need to knock on wood.
Yes.
So, you and I, we have talked before about your experience as a daughter of an officer killed in the line of duty. So, as someone who's experienced this, and I'm sure because you work in this field all the time, what do you think is the biggest aid in helping you and helping survivors through their grief?
One thing that doesn't help is so many different GoFundMe pages. Deposit to this bank or that bank,
okay.
this fundraiser there, that fundraiser there. It's too much for us.
Okay.
Because as a survivor, you feel obligated to reach out and thank that person, and thank this organization, and thank this, and thank that. You feel an obligation.
Like to do the niceties?
Yes. And go to every memorial.
Yeah.
You can't. You're still trying to pick yourself up. How do I open my eyes tomorrow morning?
How do you get out of bed?
Exactly. You're in the weeds on trying to figure out how to put one step in front of the other. But to then compound that and say, I've got all these social obligations because people expect me and it's a polite thing to do.
Sure.
Well, you empty that cup so many times, and if you're not refilling it, something's going to give.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that, like I said, it's sort of a backwards way to answer that. I think the well-meaningness of people trying to say, how can I help? What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, that was detrimental because you just have to give so much or feel compelled to give so much, and then you don't have enough in your reserves to open your eyes the next morning.
So like having those people just kind of take a step back and give some space, in, especially when it's brand new and fresh.
Exactly.
So what about when it's been, time has passed? You know, after a death, no matter who it is, it kind of seems that everybody's there. They're there to support whatever you need. How can I help? But then it's gone.
They're gone. Yes. And that's when Concerned to Police Survivor steps in. You're never going to see us planning a funeral. That's not our job.
Yeah.
Our job is to step in afterwards and say, okay, we've been through it. We don't get your particular circumstance,
sure,
but we can talk in generalities about our losses and listen to you. And that's the main thing we do is listen. We're not there to go, oh, well, let me tell you about my loss. No.
Yeah.
Let me hear about yours, Heather. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And we don't make promises because we know we can never fix what happened.
Yeah.
But if asked, we can say, like with my example, if asked, we can say, please tell me the truth as a little kid. Don't sugarcoat it. Don't hide it.
Yeah.
When asked, we will share with what worked for us.
Yeah.
But our job is just to listen and figure out where we can help a little bit. Oh, okay. You know, let me talk to you about the fiancé's retreat. Let me talk to you about the police week you're going to go through. We actually sit with people when it comes time for police week. We take last year's program and we just sit with them. Here you go. These are some of the offerings we have on these days. Here's what's going to happen during the ceremony at the Capitol.
Yeah.
Here's what's going to happen during the NLEOMF candlelight vigil. Even though they're not ours, the whole thing is police week. We want people to be prepared.
Sure.
Very overwhelming.
Sure.
So that's pretty much the time we'll talk the most. Otherwise, it's you talk, I'll listen.
Okay. Very nice. And then let's say somebody hears this podcast and they want to start giving to Washington State Concerns of Police Survivors. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
Yeah. Thanks for asking, Heather.
Yeah, absolutely.
The first thing is I want people to know that it doesn't go to a particular family.
Okay.
Which is different than the fundraisers that you see after a fallen officer's death.
Mm-hmm.
That's redundant, officer's death. Ours goes into Concerns of Washington State Concerns of Police Survivors.
Yeah.
Then we distribute. If you want to go to your extended family retreat, and we wholeheartedly encourage you to do so, send us a request, we will send you the form.
Okay.
We have to be responsible for our donations.
So sure.
We're just not going to namby-pamby say, oh, here's your money.
Yeah.
We demand that they sign a eligibility form.
Okay.
And the eligibility form says that I went to my retreat, I went to all the services that were offered. In other words, I didn't just sit in my dorm room because it's all camp. And the third one is I didn't get money from anybody else to do this because we're not supposed to make money off of this.
Yeah.
So if you go to this organization and say, can I have $1,000? This organization, pretty soon you got, oh, $5,000, and it only cost me $300 to go. That's no good. That's not the spirit of the intent of offering funds. So every year, our chapter budgets, and we say, okay, looks like we've got enough. We have maybe $40,000 in the bank, so we're not loaded, and we need to be responsible to make sure that next year, people are being able to be provided for. Because every year, all the retreats are offered. Every year, Police Week is offered.
Yeah.
Somebody might not want to go back the next year. The first year you go to Police Week, you are in a fog. You cannot, you won't remember anything because all these honors and accolades, your loved one's name is read out loud. over the 30,000 people at the candlelight vigil, and God knows how many are logging on live and then looking at YouTube later on. Your loved one's name is read. It's read at the ceremony at the Capitol with the FOP auxiliary. It's not read the two cup days because it's all about you.
Yeah.
So you can go back. We don't just say one and done.
Yeah.
So maybe 3-4 years, I want to go back to Police Week. I need to experience what I did the first time. And then the interesting thing is that not only do people want to go back, they want to go back to give.
Mm-hmm.
I received help from Police Week and Concerns of Police Survivors. I'm going to go back because I know there's more adult children this year because they're on our page now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go introduce myself to them because there's another one whose dad died when she was 8. That's how I am. Let me talk to her.
Yeah.
So you go back. And thank goodness, with our 40 grand in the bank, we can say, we'd love to help you go. It's not one and done.
Yeah.
So that's huge for us to be able to budget. But again, it's not just a particular family.
Okay.
Anybody who wants to go. Somebody who lost their officer 40 years ago. I want to go to my sibling's retreat. Absolutely. Here you go.
There you go.
But we demand accountability. Show us your flight ticket.
Mm-hmm.
We need to know what you spent. If you spend $1,000, we're not giving you $1,000. Not when you can find a flight for $600.
Yeah.
So
being fiscally responsible about those kinds of things.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We really pride ourselves. I think when our last audit was done, it's like 92% of our funds goes directly to survivor support.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's really huge. We're really glad about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know Police Week happens in May, mm-hmm. but between now and then, do you have any other upcoming events that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah. August 12th is our picnic at Angle Lake.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. We also are attending Stand With Those Who Serve on August 18th at JBLM.
Okay.
That's a huge support military, law enforcement, firefighters, basically all first responders, just to say, hey, thank you.
Okay.
Our December meeting is December 8th.
Okay.
At Kirkland PD. Kirkland PD are huge supporters of Lost State Cops. We're thrilled with them. We just love them to pieces.
Nice.
They do a golf tournament for us every year.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. Again, we're all volunteers. We work.
Yeah, yeah.
So Kirkland PD says, we're going to raise money for you guys.
That's great.
And we love them for that. We handle the registration. We're there a day of to see how we can help without hindering.
Yeah.
We provide towels, golf towels for people.
Sure.
So, yeah. Yeah. Because that's a good chunk of our budget right there at Kirkland PD.
You'd say, is that your predominant big fundraiser for the year?
It is.
Okay.
We don't have any sustained income.
Mm-hmm.
I know people see the license plates. That's not us.
Yeah.
We don't have any nothing sustained except for Kirkland PD.
Okay.
So we're really glad for them.
Okay.
We get one-off donations. Shout out to the Mopar Club up in Marysville, the Strawberry Festival last year. The Mopar Club gave us some money from receipts and the Marysville Strawberry Festival.
So that's really great.
About that.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So we get these great one-off donations that help us as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Brenda, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with me today.
Thank you, Heather. Appreciate being asked.
You're very welcome.
So that was our interview with Brenda Donner. Fantastic stuff. She's a lovely lady.
She is.
And I think she's really doing pretty cool work for families that have a really sudden death happen in their families.
Yeah.
Honestly, that really is the base level of it. A family that experiences death very quickly and doesn't know how to pick up the pieces all the time.
Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Cool. But one thing I do want to talk about a little bit, because this is an interesting issue,
mm-hmm.
is the facts and figures surrounding police officers and fatalities and such. You have some pretty good stats on that.
I do. Yeah. So, it seems like there's a lot of talk all the time about police officer deaths in the media.
Right.
Fact, 2017 was one of the lowest years for deaths of law enforcement officials.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there were 128 law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty in 2017.
Uh-huh.
That is the second lowest toll in more than 50 years.
Holy cow. Are you serious?
Second lowest.
Wow.
So in the last 50 years, the biggest years were 1974. There were 280 law enforcement officials killed. Mm. And 2001, 242.
Oh, 2001
has September
11th. September
11th. Yeah, there were something like 72 officers killed that particular day.
Okay.
So it seems like it's really, really bad all the time.
Right.
But last year was better than it has been.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's kind of... the standard operating procedure for for a lot of things is it seems like it's really horrible.
Everything's horrible all the time.
And then when you dig into the numbers, okay, it's bad. I mean, like, that's not great.
It's not great. No, but nobody should have to die in the line of duty doing their job.
Right.
If anything, that
it's getting better.
It got better. Yeah. And odd, I found this one fact that was interesting. Kind of ties in a little to our masquerade ball since we're doing a 1920s speakeasy theme.
Yes.
The 1920s were the deadliest decade in law enforcement history.
Oh, wow.
2,480 officers died, which is an average about 248 a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is the deadliest decade and the deadliest year in law enforcement history. They've been keeping these stats since, was it 1791?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Boy, they were some real, like, data nerds back in 1791.
Yeah, they're just like,
They usually don't keep stats that far back.
Yeah, 1791, yeah. Right? So, 1930 was the deadliest year in law for law enforcement officers. 310 were killed that year.
Wow, well, you know, it's the decade of the gangster and Al Capone.
Hey, Chicago,
John Dillinger and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and as far as Washington State goes, since 1791, there's this website called Officer Down Memorial Page.
Yeah.
And they've been keeping the records for these stats and updating them. So overall, since 1791, 23,381 line of duty deaths have occurred that they know of.
Wow.
And for Washington State, our total for the whole state is 289.
Wow. Okay.
And most of those are by gunfire.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a sort of personal note with regard to this, so I used to work at a movie theater.
Yeah.
And the every single Saturday they would have Friday and Saturday night they'd have a police officer who would basically act as security for the place so it didn't get too rowdy or whatever.
Because. Movie theaters. I mean, you guys in Olympia. And
hey, we go crazy. We go crazy.
Your nightmares in the 90s.
We go ham.
Yeah, you do.
His name was Officer Sean Mundell, and he worked for Pierce County Sheriff. He worked for a while. He just worked for regular Pierce County Sheriff in Puyallup, and then he eventually, after I left, transferred to sort of like the rural division, if you will. So he's answering calls on Graham and Roy and all those sort of different places. And he was a lovely man. He was actually a good friend. And you remember that that time period when the four officers in Lakewood were shot? Basically 2 weeks later, an officer was shot answering a domestic call out in rural Graham. And it was Officer Sean Mundell.
Wow.
And he had died. And I had the great fortune to... my dad, who was working at Pierce County Corrections at the time, was able to get a car in the motorcade.
Yeah.
And so we were able to be a part of the motorcade.
Oh, that's nice.
And got a chance to go to Tacoma Dome and honor him. But I remember watching everything and sort of being sort of awed by how surreal it was.
Yeah.
You know, and then to see the various officers who knew him or family members and how emotionally broken they were at the time, you know, you really do think, man, you hope that there are people out there who can help. And so that's what's really cool about places like the Washington State Concern for Police Survivors.
Absolutely.
I know we have an issue in this country with, you know, the difference between law enforcement and folks in the community from time to time, you know, and I sympathize with all those things. I hope that one day we can really, you know, close that gap to where the communities are speaking to each other and you know, those sort of confrontations are done with respect.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty cool podcast, a pretty cool interview. Give you some of the upcoming events that are happening here. One of our member charities is actually still with the Secretary of State's office.
Yeah.
A charity called Legacy Washington. They're doing an awesome, awesome display for 1968. It's the 50th anniversary of 1968, which was this crazy year that had all these assassinations of significant political figures.
There was a big war happening.
the bloodiest year of the Vietnam War. They're opening this really incredible visually... really just
stunning exhibit
on September 13th. So for those of you who are interested in that time period, the activism, the politics of it, the sort of powder keg that it was, come on down and you'll be able to check out the display at the Secretary of State's office. The Department of Ecology, shout out to those kooky volunteers. They're doing their kickoff on September 20th. We usually don't highlight kickoffs of individual agencies, but these people are insane.
And we get to be in the band. They have a marching band.
They have a marching band. And so watch Twitter, watch Facebook, because I'm sure we're going to throw up some video and some photos. We're in the band. They have a friggin' marching band. They watch the whole thing. It's super cool. And then the Bite of L&I is another really great great thing that folks like to go to. It's the L&I building in Tumwater. They have all this really amazing sort of ethnic food. And it, the Ethiopian lunch, for those who listen and may have gone to that, was sort of born out of the Bite of L&I.
It was so delicious.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, my God. It was so delicious.
And then, of course, the Golf for Veterans Tournament is next Saturday.
Yeah.
Of course, watch out for the Masquerade Ball. And for those who like this sort of podcast and listen to us from time to time, during the campaign, every day, we're going to have some version of a podcast. Either you'll hear the voice of Heather and myself or Jerrica and myself, and we'll be talking about different charities in the community. So all the those are all the things that are coming up. We are busy bees at the moment.
We are, in fact.
Yes. So watch out for all that different content. Keep listening. Thank you very much for listening to this very special podcast.
Bye.